Welcome back to the Book of Esther. Chapter 9 is the final showdown. Remember, we're listening in as Grandpa retells the story at Purim, and there is much left to settle. The French word, denouement, literally means untying, and it refers to that part of a story that unties all the story's messy entanglements. Nothing worse than a story that ties you up in knots and leaves you there. With all the celebration in Chapter 8, it kind of felt like victory already happened. Haman may be gone, but the battle is ahead. Actually, this already but not yet victory is a lot like following Jesus. He won the war, but our fight rages on. Now in Chapter 9, all the kids at Grandpa's feet are at rapt attention as the story reaches the big day, the 13th of Adar. The lot was cast months ago, and this day was chosen. Was it chance? Was it fate? Was it the Lord? Whatever chose it, the day is here, and two edicts both come into effect today. The first edict is a command to kill, destroy, and annihilate millions of Jews. Millions. Hold that fact in your mind as we read this chapter, and don't imagine for a moment that this hatred for the Jews died with Haman. It is pervasive in the empire. Yet a second edict also comes into effect on this day. The Jews in every city have the right to assemble and protect themselves, to destroy, kill, and annihilate the armed men who attack. For the Jews, the call is clear. They must defend themselves. But every Gentile in the empire has a choice to make. Heed the first edict and take up weapons against the Jews, or heed the second and stay home. Before we begin, I want to take a minute to address the plain fact that the chapter ahead is violent. Kids, pause the audio and check with your parents first. The words are not graphic, but the violence is real. Two edicts stand. One is genocidal, the other a just defense. Yet both are violent. And though I would love a third option that avoids bloodshed, that option is not present. You should know, I hate violence. Not just a normal level, I mean that violence really affects me. I can't watch violent movies the way most folks can. Even when the violence is just or righteous or protecting, it still affects me. My grandfather and father both went to war, but my dad transferred from military to diplomacy, and I inherited a healthy dose of that mindset. Diplomacy first. I tell you that now because it's only fair for you to know your teacher's worldview. But it's also important to consider God's viewpoint. His name isn't mentioned here, but he sees it all. So how does God view violence? Psalm 11 says, "The Lord tests the righteous, but the wicked and the one who loves violence, his soul hates." Strong language. And Ezekiel 18 challenges us further. "Do I take any pleasure in the death of the wicked, declares the sovereign Lord? Rather, am I not pleased when they turn from their ways and live?" That should keep us all in check. God hates the love of violence, and he takes no pleasure in the death of anyone. This chapter will have a lot of death, no matter how it goes down. I'm rooting for justice, for defending the innocent and protecting God's people. But God will not take pleasure in the death of anyone, not even the wicked. Okay, sorry for the interruption, Grandpa. Let's get back to the story. Chapter 9, verse 1. On the 13th day of the 12th month, the month of Adar, the edict commanded by the king was to be carried out. On this day, the enemies of the Jews had hoped to overpower them. But now the tables were turned, and the Jews got the upper hand over those who hated them. There it is. The tables are turned on those who hated, and the great reversal continues. The Jews assemble, and in verse 3, attack those determined to destroy them. No one could stand against them, because the people of all the other nationalities were afraid of them. Amazingly, province governors help the Jews, because fear of Mordecai has seized them. His reputation has spread. Verse 5, the Jews struck down all their enemies with the sword, killing and destroying them, and they did what they pleased to those who hated them. That last phrase is disconcerting. If God takes no pleasure in death, Why did the Jews here do as they pleased? So I dug in. The word in Hebrew does not indicate cruelty, but rather emphasizes empowerment and self-will. The Jews were powerless, slated for death with no recourse. Now they have power. They control their fate. If you have ever known oppression, no power over your own life, and longed for empowerment, this is that moment. Take no pleasure in the death of the wicked, but rejoice with Isaiah 40. He gives power to the weak and strength to the powerless. Back in Esther, verse 6. In the citadel of Susa, the Jews killed and destroyed 500 men. Notice something. 500 men. If you recall the difficulty of the edict's language, there is no mention here of killing kids or women. Looks like the Jews showed mercy. Nonetheless, when a man dies in battle, his family bears the brunt of pain. Husband and father gone. War is always terrible. But so they chose. In verse 10, the Jews also killed the 10 sons of Haman, son of Hammedatha, the enemy of the Jews. But they did not lay their hands on the plunder. So they didn't take the plunder after all. Edict said they could, but they did not. Three times it's repeated, they did not take the plunder. Why does that matter? Abraham set the precedent in the battle of 4 kings against 5. A righteous battle is not for plunder. Motives matter. But also remember King Saul's battle against Haman's ancestor Agag. The Lord commanded Saul to destroy the Amalekites, but take no plunder. Saul, however, spared wicked Agag and kept plunder. Centuries later, these Jews reverse it. King Xerxes gets a report and relays it to Queen Esther, and he offers her the opportunity for one further request. In verse 13, "If it pleases the king," Esther answered, "give the Jews in Susa permission to carry out this day's edict tomorrow also. And let Haman's 10 sons be impaled on poles." Apparently, Esther has gotten another report that there are more in the capital who intend to kill the Jews the following day, and she wants to give them more time to defend themselves. As for Haman's sons, they're already dead. But Esther wants the world to see what the king does to those who tried to kill his bride and her people. The king agrees. Haman's sons are put on display, and the Jews in the capital city put to death another 300 men. Yet take note in verse 15, "But they did not lay their hands on the plunder." Meanwhile, the remainder of the Jews who were in the king's provinces also assembled to protect themselves and get relief from their enemies. They killed 75,000 of them, but did not lay their hands on the plunder. The violent end of thousands across the kingdom is a great tragedy. It's horrific. But the language is clear. The Jews assembled to protect themselves. Those 75,000 were attackers. Understand that Edict No. 1 ordered the death of millions of Jews, and 75,000 rose up and armed themselves to carry it out. I believe that many more would have, had it not been for Edict 2. Imagine for a moment that we could rewrite modern history to empower the 6 million Jews murdered in the Holocaust to protect themselves. And history instead accounted 75,000 Nazis killed, and the end of fighting after one day. That is the scale of this victory in Esther 9. We've been asking, where is the Lord in this story? When the powerless are empowered, that is the Lord's work. Yet in his presence, understand that he takes no pleasure in the death of anyone. The enemy comes to steal, kill, and destroy. Jesus came that we might have life. Look at verse 17. This happened on the 13th day of the month of Adar, and on the 14th they rested and made it a day of feasting and joy. There is great joy here, as there should be. But notice that the storyteller is very careful to specify the precise days. And verse 18 says that the Jews in the capital city, Susa, were different. They battled the 13th and 14th. Why the clear distinction? Because in Susa, the 15th of Adar was a day of feasting and joy. But in verse 19, rural Jews observed the 14th of the month of Adar as a day of joy and feasting, a day for giving presents to each other. Why the careful distinction of days? The storyteller wants it clear. They remember the day of battle, but they celebrate the days of peace. And speaking of celebration, we'll come back for the second half of Esther 9 next time.
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the word.